This is America on the Road, winner of the International Automotive Media Conference Gold Medal Award for Radio, and now in its 24th year on the air. Thanks for being with us as we bring you the latest automotive information from around the world, and a very happy New Year to you. This show is going to air on New Year's Eve originally, and you might be listening to it then, or you might be listening to it some months after New Year's Eve, who knows. America on the Road is brought to you by DrivingToday.com and the Coalition for Vehicle Choice. I'm Jack Nerad. With me is co-host Chris Teague. Chris, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me. Jack, how are things in your current corner of the world?
Things are just swell. It was a little cold this morning. We had a hailstorm yesterday, which is very uncharacteristic for us. Lightning, thunder, and hail almost never happens in Southern California, but we did have it. You would probably welcome that as being good weather compared to what you're experiencing in Maine, right?
It's actually not been too bad. We had some rain, but it's just been very cold. Christmas Day was rainy and gross, but can't complain too much.
Okay, well, very good. It is sunshiny here today as we're putting this together. This week we have a special guest whose name is Brian Bell. He's marketing manager for the 2021 Ford F-150 pickup truck, and he'll be giving us a close-up look at that, what we can expect from that new truck, which is some pretty cool things. I've driven it. I think I reviewed it on the show already, but we'll talk to him about it. And in the car review segment, Chris, what were you driving this past week?
I was driving, and I'm still driving, the 2021 Cadillac CT5.
Ah, very good. Well, you're not driving it as you're doing the show, right?
No.
Okay. Well, very good. I'm going to be talking about the Hyundai Elantra N line, which is not a subway line. It is actually a version of the Elantra that's kind of sporting. So we'll talk about that. But before we do any of that, let's take a look at the week's automotive news. Here's a story that we found, and it's about Apple. We were talking about Apple last week, looking as if it's going to introduce a new car suddenly. I mean, kind of out of the blue, somebody let that slip. And in response to that, Elon Musk of Tesla fame did some tweeting and said that he reached out to Apple during the development of the Model 3, which really wasn't all that long ago. That was their stab at a volume car, and I guess it has become essentially a volume car for them. And he was looking to sell Tesla to Apple and for about $60 billion, which to Apple is chump change, right? So kind of interesting. What do you think about that idea of a Apple and Tesla combined?
I think there's some shared, and I'm going to sound like going back to business school here, I think there's some shared competencies there, and they definitely share a lot of the same sort of consumers and buyers, early adopters, tech-heavy people who like the premium product. So I think there could have been some good, you know, inroads or good dual sort of benefits for both companies there. But this whole thing about the Apple Car, you know, we talked about this last week, is, you know, they were going to build it, then they're not going to build it, now they are going to build it. But, you know, everyone seems to be thinking it's going to be coming very soon, but I think it's going to be further than that. But very interesting from Tesla, given how valuable they are today.
Right. And interesting, too, that Apple has gone out and hired a bunch of ex-Tesla people to be part of their auto adventure, whatever that venture turns out to be, whether it's building cars, designing cars to be built elsewhere, and then marketing them as Apple cars, or that whole thing is just going to explode, I think, over the course of the next several years as we hear more about it. But kind of a bombshell at the end of 2020 to hear about this and hear about the fact that Tesla almost became part of Apple, and essentially, I guess, Tim Cook of Apple just snubbed Elon Musk, said, I don't need a meeting with you, and on they went. So,
yeah, I guess you need to question or at least think about what Elon's priorities were in that sale. Other than financial, what would be the benefit there for him? So,
yeah, I think they were despondent there for a while. I think they were very, very worried about how this whole thing was going to come together, especially as they started to build vehicles in larger volume. That's not easy to do. When you're building 20,000 of something, of a vehicle in particular, over the course of the year, I'm not saying that's easy, but it's sure a lot harder than building 300,000 of something. So that takes an exponential kind of growth and learning curve. So
right.
Here's another story. At the end of the year, Automotive News, which is one of our favorite trade publications, looks at the top stories from years past. Of course, the top story this year was the coronavirus and what it has done to the auto industry. And interestingly, it hasn't been as tragic for the auto industry as it seemed like it might be in mid-March. I think the auto industry is going to come in at something like 14.5 million unit sales for 2020, which is certainly off the close to 17 million that we had the year before, but it is not down around the 10, 12 million that some people were predicting when coronavirus first struck. So that was the big story of this year. Some of the big stories through the years are kind of amusing, or were amusing to me. I guess I'm a bit of a car history buff. But the big story in 1957 was the rise of imported car sales. Now, I'm not sure that you, Chris, would think in 1957 that the rise of imported car sales would be the biggest automotive news story of the year.
No, but it is interesting in light of, you know, the way cars are built today, where, you know, Toyota, Honda, Subaru, basically every major auto manufacturer has a facility or a presence here domestically as well as, you know, abroad. And there are all sorts of gauges, percentages of domestic product that are made. So it's interesting to hear, you know, I guess at some point it's not surprising, but it's interesting, like I said, to compare to today's marketplace or climate.
Right. The following year, 1958, marked the enactment of the price sticker law, the fabled Monroney label that we all refer to, the manufacturer suggested retail price label that is on every car. Before 1958, that was not required. It didn't have to be there. And that was put in there as a consumer protection. You know, other interesting stories along the way. This is a nice two-year thing where in 1968, a guy named Bunky Knudsen, his name really wasn't Bunky, but that was his nickname that he went by, was named president of Ford Motor Company after he had quit as the executive vice president of General Motors. So that was a big deal. I mean, you leave General Motors to become head of Ford. And then the following year, he was fired as president of Ford Motor Company. He was in the job for 19 months. So interesting stuff, I think, along the way. In 1987, here's a big one for Chrysler. In 1987, Chrysler bought American Motors, which doesn't sound like that big a deal, except when you realize that American Motors owned Jeep, and Jeep has become the biggest thing that Chrysler has going. So without that purchase in 1987, who knows what would have happened with Chrysler. And now, of course, Chrysler, in a big move for 2019, has launched into what could be a merger with PSA, with Peugeot, and that French auto builder. So stuff happening, certainly. And it will ever be thus, right? I mean, there is the soap opera that is this car industry. Well, let's talk a bit about some cool cars that are going to debut next year, which is fast coming upon us. There is the GMC Hummer EV. What's your take on that, Chris?
You know, we talked a little bit about this when a little after the debut a couple of months ago. It's hard to see, you know, people are obviously very excited about it, but it's going to be hard to see how many they sell of them at $100,000+ a pop, I guess, once everything is said and done. They may sell a bunch. People seem to be very excited, but I'm just kind of hoping that we get over this hump of these ultra expensive, ultra luxury EVs and start building more middle of the road vehicles that people like myself could actually end up buying. Of course, Tesla is doing that sort of with the Model Y and the Model 3, but they've also had a few years of building EVs under their belt. So I think it'll be exciting. I would love to get behind the wheel of one.
Yeah, well, talking about a more affordable EV, let's talk about the Volkswagen ID.4. So that will certainly be much less expensive, maybe as low as $35,000 or so, about the same size as a Tiguan. A lot of similarities to a lot of vehicles that are already on sale in Europe. What's your take on that and how that might fit into the American market?
Well, people... How do I want to say this? Well, Volkswagen's doing a great thing. So they've got the ID sort of, I would call it a platform or whatever, and they're going to build a few different things around it. But, you know, I hope that people latch onto it and buy it. The pricing looks to be right. The range is decent or very good, actually, for the price at around 250 miles. So that might be when more and more people start dipping their toe in. You know, Ford with the Mach-E this year and going into next year. They're kind of getting some of that too, but those are a little bit more expensive. So I think it'll be good to see an EV from a major manufacturer landing at around $40,000 with a good amount of range to go with it.
Yeah, that's an important price point, I think. You know, the average transaction for a new vehicle is right around that. I think it's $38,000 or something like that. It's actually gone up fairly significantly in 2020. I think those people who could still afford to buy new cars were shelling out for new cars and snapping up some deals out there that were certainly available in 2020, and that sent the transaction price higher. At the same time, we had many fewer cars being sold. So here's one more cool car that we can talk about, and then we'll go on to a different segment, and that's the Volvo XC40 Recharge, another EV. What are your thoughts on that vehicle, Chris?
I had nothing but great things to say about the XC40, the standard XC40. I think it mixed just enough quirk in with the sort of upscale compact crossover formula to make it work really well. If they're able to match that with the Recharge, then I'm on board 100%.
Yeah, well, we'll see, and we'll get a chance to drive all these vehicles coming up. That's the beauty of this job, is we get to drive the new stuff while it's still really, really new, and we will be doing that over the course of the next few weeks, and certainly reporting that to you right here on America on the Road. Well, when we come back, we'll be doing our road testing of the Cadillac CT5 and the Hyundai Elantra N-Line. So stay with us for that. With Chris Teague, this is Jack Nerad, and you're listening to America on the Road. Welcome back, everybody, to America on the Road. Jack Nerad with you, along with Chris Teague, and we're so thankful he's with us, and we're thankful that you're with us. And let me say this right before we get into road test time. If you like the show, please pass it along to a car friend of yours, somebody who enjoys automobiledom. We think they might like the show, and I hope if you like it, I imagine your friends would probably like it, so pass it along. And now let's talk about vehicles we've road tested this week. And Chris, you were driving the Cadillac CT5.
I was, and as I said earlier, I still am. This is the 2021 CT5, the premium luxury model. It starts around $46,000. My price as tested is just under $57,000. This car comes standard with a 2-liter twin scroll turbocharged engine. But this car, as many of our test vehicles are, has been upgraded with a 3-liter twin turbo V6. It puts down 335 horsepower to all four wheels. This car has optional all-wheel drive, and my test model does have that option equipped. If that sounds like a lot of horsepower, it is, especially for what is essentially a luxury cruiser. This car can do 0 to 60 in somewhere just under 5 seconds, which was sports car territory not all that long ago, and still kind of is for many sports cars. Very nice inside, very spacious. So up front, Jack, here's where I tell you how tall I am. At 6 feet tall, absolutely no problem finding a comfortable driving position.
And it's good that we got that in, you know, in the second segment. We don't have to go to third or fourth segment to get in your height. We've got it right now.
Yeah, I've got to get it in. Maybe I'll start doing my weight. It'll help me stay accountable too.
That would be interesting. Yeah, I'd be curious about that, actually.
I'm not going to drop that on there right now.
Okay.
With full-size car seats in the back, there's no contact between the front seats and the back, so there's plenty of leg room in the rear as well. And this car has a really gently sloping roof. It's actually quite beautiful from the outside, but unlike some cars, it doesn't chop off the headroom in the back seat. So if you are 6 feet tall or taller, you're still going to have plenty of room to ride in the back. There are plenty of options in this car, you know, from I think it's an 8-inch touchscreen. It runs Cadillac and GM's, the Cadillac user experience, if I can talk correctly today. It's very colorful. It's very intuitive. Once you kind of settle into how the menus are arranged and Apple CarPlay specifically where it's located, you can hop right in and go. you know, the connections are great. This car has wireless device charging. So,
well, which is great too, because Cadillacs of years prior, not so good. I mean, most of the General Motors infotainment interfaces were great, and then Cadillac inexplicably was just horrible, or if not horrible, just not nearly as good. So I'm glad to hear you say that.
Yeah, they've come a long way, and the same was true in the XT crossovers that I tested earlier this year. They've definitely made leaps and bounds in a positive direction. This car has, like I said, a long list of options: 18-inch wheels, heated and cooled front seats, leather-wrapped steering wheel, anything you can slap into a luxury car minus a panoramic moonroof and massaging seats, this car has. On the road, it feels like a big, heavy American sedan. So this is what one of my first cars was, a 1976 Cadillac Fleetwood Brougham Elegance. It was like 20 feet long, and that felt substantial for all the obvious reasons. But this car has that same sort of almost... floating down the road feeling.
Were you a livery driver? I mean, I'm kind of surprised that that's an early car that a young person would have.
No, that was one of my first cars. My very first car was a 1971 Oldsmobile 442. So went through the large old cars quickly at first, but that was a very nice one. But this car, replicates that feeling to a degree. Obviously, it doesn't have velvet bench seats and things like that, but it does kind of bring back that old kind of American feeling luxury. And my wife remarked, this thing must only get like 10 miles to the gallon. It feels like it weighs, 15,000 pounds, but it still gets around 25 miles on the highway. I think I even beat that almost 26, at least according to the car. So, they've done a good job. They pulled off the luxury feeling and made it a really special feeling car.
Oh, very, very cool. I haven't had a chance to drive a CT5, so I look forward to doing that. I expect it to be quite good. And I think they're kind of underrated as in terms of performance, too. I mean, you talked about the performance. It's not something that people immediately associate with Cadillac is really good performance, but a lot of the vehicles do offer pretty darn good performance these days, don't they?
Yeah, and this isn't even the high-performance V model.
V version, right.
Yeah, you see some of those coming out, and there are rumors that might come down the road for this car. But 5 seconds 0 to 60, it's not too much. You can't really turn your lip up too bad at that. That's a pretty stout number, and the steering weights up nicely. There's not a lot of feel to it. That's probably my biggest complaint with the steering and the performance is the steering feels very numb, but the brakes are very confidence inspiring, very solid. And in sport mode, this car, it doesn't hang with the best of them, but it'll definitely be good for a few thrills.
Right. Well, speaking of thrills, and thrills from a manufacturer, from a brand that you wouldn't necessarily expect thrills from, you'd expect high-quality vehicles from, but not necessarily thrills. The vehicle I was driving was the 2021 Elantra N-Line from Hyundai. It is the performance version of the Elantra, and don't scoff at that, because there is real performance out of this vehicle. The Elantra is all new. This version of the Elantra is all new for 2021. And as I say, the N-Line is their performance excitement version. And it has a lot of the right stuff, absolutely. I mean, you start with the turbocharged engine, 201 horsepower out of the engine, which is nice to push a compact sedan down the road. It's not going to bowl anybody over with its performance, but it's certainly a very good performance. The engine is a 1.6 liter turbocharged engine. Six-speed manual transmission is the transmission that was in the test car that I had. They had a special drive for those of us in the North American Car of the Year jury to get behind the wheel of the Elantra N-Line, because it hasn't been out there. It's not out there in any numbers even yet. I think we were driving a pre-production vehicle, to tell you the truth. It also has the option of a 7-speed double-clutch transmission, which would be nice. I didn't get a chance to drive it. But it has a manual shift mode in addition to being an automatic, and it is quick shifts is what it promises through its paddle shifter, so it'll be interesting to get a chance to drive that. And then it has the other things that kind of support that engine. Some of them are just looks in terms of design. It has a different grille with a distinctive red character line. And red means fast. If you see red on the car, you can bet that car is fast, right, Chris?
And that's 20 horsepower, Jack.
Yeah, exactly. So you've got that. It has a different front bumper fascia. It has a different rear fascia. It has a diffuser, because you need a diffuser, because that's a spell speed as well. A lip spoiler to spoil your lips. No, it isn't to spoil your lips, but it is a little spoiler. And I think a tastefully done spoiler on the back of the car. It has 18-inch wheels, which is a big advantage. And your choice of tires, there's either an all-season tire from Hankook or the Goodyear Eagle summer tires. And that's on the vehicles with the 6-speed manual transmission, because manual transmission spells summer tires. Twin exhaust. It's got some real stuff. I mean, this is one of those vehicles that an enthusiast who doesn't have a ton of money can buy this car, be really happy about it out of the box, maybe do some stuff to it to make it even a little bit more personal. It has a lot of great interior pieces that also support this whole performance look. So, I'm a big proponent of these kinds of vehicles that are performance versions of something that is a pretty good, just generalist kind of car, a good 4-door or 5-passenger compact sedan. And then you put a little more horsepower through it and change the suspension tuning and give it some better tires. And all of a sudden you've got something that I think is exciting to drive and exciting for a lot of people.
I agree. I think, you know, Hyundai's done a really good job with their inline and also the N, just like Honda did with the Civic so many years ago with the SI and the Type R. But as I'm hearing or seeing, you know, there would be an Elantra N next year at some point, which is even hotter. And I have no idea the degree to which this is happening, but it'll be exciting to see where the aftermarket goes with these cars. As you said, kind of personalizing, people putting their own touch on their car. So I'm all for it. I love the tuner culture and the hot regular car culture. So I'm excited.
Yeah, we haven't seen a whole lot of that with Hyundai yet. Of course, there really haven't been the platforms. You know, certainly the Honda Civic is the poster child for being hopped up by, you know, hot rodding, a new age kind of hot rodding. But we'll see, because I imagine a lot of people are going to look at this vehicle and go, yeah, this is a very good platform, a high quality platform with a lot of the right stuff to begin with, including a very strong standard engine. And then you go from there. So I think you're absolutely right. The tuner culture can get after this Elantra N line pretty rapidly.
Absolutely.
So a couple of great cars that we like, performance oriented, from manufacturers you don't necessarily associate with performance: the Cadillac CT5 and the Hyundai Elantra N line, a contender for North American Car of the Year. So we'll see how it fares there. And when we come back, we will be taking your listener questions and answering at least one of them, and maybe more. So stay with us for that. With Chris Teague, Jack Nerad with you. And thanks so much for being with us right here on America on the Road. Welcome back, everybody, to America on the Road with Chris Teague, Jack Nerad back with you for question and answer time. You send us your questions, we give you our answers. And the twain meets. It's a wonderful symbiotic relationship that we have with our audience. And we'd love to hear your question. If you want to send us a question, send it to editor@drivingtoday.com, editor@drivingtoday.com. And we'll answer it on an upcoming show. Of course, Driving Today is the sister website to America on the Road. And let's take a question here. And here's a question from Vancouver, Washington. And the question is this: where was my car built? How can I figure out where my car was actually built? And I think a lot of people would like to know that. Chris, you know, what are your thoughts on answering that question? I've got a thought, but I'd like to hear yours.
Yeah, we talked about this a little bit before, but it can also, you can find it in a few different places. And I think that I'm going to get you to talk about the most complicated one. But the first is on your car's window sticker. You should be able to find the final assembly location there. That doesn't tell you where all the parts came from. It just tells you where they were all put together before your car either rolled off the assembly line or got on a boat or however it got to you. But the other way is with the vehicle identification number, or the VIN, which is a 17-digit number or a name, I guess, as you could probably call it. It's made up of numbers and letters. But in that number, there are characters that indicate where your vehicle is made. Right, Jack?
Absolutely true. And we were talking about the Monroney label, I think, in the in the first segment because it was authorized in 1958 and it became law, and that does indicate where your vehicle was assembled. And I think in most instances, the Moroni will also tell you the percentage of domestic content, so American-made content in the vehicle. So that's good to know if you want chapter and verse on it.
A CT5 right now, if you'd like.
Yeah, there you go. So,
5% U.S. Canadian and 19% major sources of foreign parts.
Ah, wow. So right at your fingertips, you had that. What are those percentages? Again, I kind of stepped on you.
Well, they don't add up to 100. So this car was made from unobtainium at some point. The 55% of the car are U.S. and Canadian parts. 19% of the parts are from China. And then the other, I guess, 24% is unknown. At least according to the Moroni label.
Right. Well, hopefully they were made somewhere or beamed down to us from another planet, perhaps.
Yes.
But in terms of the vehicle identification number, it is a very handy-dandy source of information if you know how to decode it. And there are actually decoders online. You can just key in your VIN, and it'll tell you a bunch of stuff about your car and probably tell your fortune, your shoe size, and what you should weigh and your suggested body weight, all of that stuff. With Chris being 6 feet tall, I think he's probably maybe 185 would be a good body weight, but I'm not sure you're going to get that from your VIN. You can learn from the VIN, though, your model year, the make of the vehicle, the actual model of the vehicle, the engine size, and the manufacturer. In the listener question, where your car is made is just the first digit of that 17, so you don't have to go very far. You don't have to count into the 17. You just look at the first piece of code. If it's a 1, a 4, or a 5, the car was built in the United States and you win a cigar. Well, you might not win a cigar, but it was built in the United States. A 2 indicates it was built in Canada. A 3 indicates Mexico. A J indicates it was built in what country? Chris Teague.
Jordan. No, I'm sorry. Japan.
Ah, yes. Good. Luckily, you had three guesses, so you got that one right. A K indicates?
South Korea.
Very good. And then S. What does S indicate?
I've done some homework since our last discussion. It's England.
Good, good, good. This is a bit of a memory test. And then W indicates it was assembled in Germany. Z indicates what country?
We talked about this before. I do not know the answer.
It is one of my favorite countries, actually, and a great country for food. Maybe not so great for cars. Well, I guess some of the best cars in the world come from here. Italy.
Yes.
Is the place. So all of that you can learn just from one digit in that 17-digit code that is on every vehicle.
That's interesting. There's a whole lot of other things we should get into on the next episode about the rest of those digits.
When we come back, we will be doing an interview with a guy who is the marketing manager for the Ford F-150 pickup truck. His name is Brian Bell, and we'll be speaking to him when we come back. So stay with us with Chris Teague, Jack Nerad with you right here on America on the Road. Welcome back, everybody, to America on the Road. Jack Nerad back with you, and we're remote right now in Tejon Ranch, north of Los Angeles, California, driving the all-new 2021 Ford F-150 pickup truck, an absolutely crucial vehicle for Ford Motor Company. Always has been, always will be, I think. And with me is Brian Bell. He is an expert on the truck, marketing manager for the truck. Thanks so much for being with us. We appreciate it.
Thank you. I appreciate taking a few minutes to come out to the ranch today.
Well, it's an exciting day to drive this vehicle after hearing so much about it for so long. How would you characterize the importance of the F-150 to Ford Motor Company?
Well, you know, I tell everybody I have the best job in all of the auto industry, right? I am the marketing manager for what is the industry-leading vehicle, you know, sales-wise, the U.S., top-selling truck for 43 years. It just doesn't get any better, and it's such a critical vehicle for Ford Motor Company. You know, it's big volume, very loyal customers. We want to keep happy and in the fold, and so it's a critical truck for us.
It's kind of like managing the New York Yankees, right? You you have this expectation of excellence hanging over you, which is both a good and bad thing, I would think.
It is, but it makes it so great to work on. I won't kid you. I love working on F-150.
Well, when we come to this 2021 F-150, again, an all-new iteration of this, tell us what you think the consumer should know as the most important features, the most important things about this truck.
You know, that there are so many stories. That this is an all-new vehicle for us. Over 90% of the parts are new in the truck. But we kept some key things that were core, right? Our high-strength military-grade aluminum alloy body, our high-strength steel frame was a great combination to build the truck on. We launched in 2015, Super Duty launched in 2017. Our customers really appreciate it, so we're continuing with that combination of materials. But then we've got some great additional stories coming to the vehicle this year. Our new full hybrid powertrain called the Power Boost. It's a phenomenal engine. It'll have the most horsepower and torque in our lineup with 570 foot-pounds of torque. So basically we took our 3.5 EcoBoost engine, which is fantastic and has been very powerful in our top towing powertrain, and we added a full hybrid powertrain system to that to give customers really the best of all worlds, right? So you're getting a power and capability and efficiency all at the same time. It's a really great combination. We're really excited to bring it to market.
When a lot of people think of hybrids, they probably still think of fuel economy. They don't think of better drivability, better low-end torque, better, you know, all those other things that this enables you to do. Tell a bit about the advantages beyond fuel economy of this hybrid powertrain.
So this hybrid powertrain being the most powerful engine in our lineup, right? Like I said, it's 570 foot-pounds of torque. It will tow over a 12,700-pound trailer is its max tow rating for it. So a ton of capability, right, when you think about that size trailer behind the truck. At the same time, it'll go over 700 miles on a tank of fuel. So it's a great combination for our customers.
Right. And I kind of have to compare it a lot of times to, say, a turbo diesel installation in a full-size pickup truck, where you have a lot of torque, you also have a lot of range, you have high fuel economy. What you don't have, though, typically is immediate torque. I mean, the drivability of this new hybrid powertrain, I think, is spectacular.
Oh, yeah, you get all that electric power to really help give you that boost all the time, right? So it really is. It's a great combination for customers. And then we added to that engine now, knowing and researching our customers, they're looking for a different kind of power with their vehicles. So with our hybrid powertrain, we actually added our Pro Power onboard system, which is an onboard generator. Every hybrid will come standard with a 2.4 kilowatts of power generator system in the vehicle, which is like a portable generator. And you can option up to a 7.2 kilowatt version, which, to put in context, is enough to power 28 refrigerators at the same time, right? So it's a lot of electrical power in addition to all this great traditional performance power.
Do you think it's the amount of electrical power that you could power, you know, a bunch of tools on a job site? Or, you know, put it into context
That's the idea behind it. It's really, you know, when we see customers, a lot of truck customers, they take generators with them. When you take a generator, you've got to lock it down, secure it, you got to take fuel for it. We said we can do that for you and make it a great system, build it right into the truck. And you can take it to the job site and power, you know, a whole job site's worth of tools with 7.2 kilowatts of power. You can have the, you know, a humongous tailgate at any football game you want, great for campsites. It's great, you know, like there's an image behind us on the wall right now, person working on our new tailgate work surface with the Pro Power on board, so you can actually work off the back of your truck. You know, think of a home improvement project, right? I redid my deck last year. I used the back of my truck for that works, that tailgate as my workbench. Now I got power with it too, so.
Right. Well, let's talk about that tailgate. There's kind of tailgate wars, right, in the full-size pickup truck realm. A bunch of different brands are touting the wonderfulness of their tailgates. Tell about the F-150 tailgate and what's special about it.
So we added a tailgate work surface to the truck this year, which is really, researching customers, we find that they use that tailgate like a workbench. So we just gave a better one. It's a flat surface. It's got some tape measures built in. It's got additional tie downs that will double as bottle openers. It's actually got clamp pockets in it, so you can actually clamp the wood or whatever you're working on down to the tailgate. At the same time, we continue with our tailgate step, which works great, right? It's in the end of the tailgate, so you can climb up in the bed easily. And you tie that with our Pro Power onboard system, so you've got electrical power right there for your tools or your battery chargers, whatever it is. It's a great combination for our customers.
Let's talk about interior. Let's start with interior space and interior usability, because I think you've done a lot of things to make that interior both roomier and probably a lot more usable. Talk about that.
We have done a lot to the interior of the truck, and you know, from a comfort usability standpoint, we've upgraded the materials and finishes and the stitching. When you crawl around the trucks, you can really see the what we've done to the inside of them. At the same time, we've added dual glove boxes. We've added under seat lockable closed storage in the rear seat that actually will fold down out of the way if you want the big flat load floor, or you can pop it up and then, you know, cover it with the back seat so it's closed, lockable, hidden storage in the truck.
And you can pop it up and it'll hold grocery bags for
yeah.
you. There's a lot of versatility to that.
There really is. And customers tell us they want versatility with trucks. That's really key to them. At the same time,
and it's lockable, right? I mean, you could put stuff in there, potentially valet park, and that stuff would be secure.
Yes, you use the key from the vehicle to lock the seat down, and it locks under there so that they can't get to it, they can't see it. So it works great that way.
These vehicles are often used dual use, right? I mean, they're used for work, but they're also used for leisure. A lot of people, you know, claim bragging rights about their truck, and it's the family vehicle of choice these days because of the crew cab configuration. Talk a bit about that and how that figured into what you put together in the 2021 F-150.
Well, you know what? One of the real fun things to work on when you're working an F-150 is I get a wide range of customers and uses. But we range from our XL work truck that still has manual crank windows, right? For those customers, those real commercial fleet customers with it, all the way up to our Platinum Limited and King Ranch, which are very premium, some of those premium vehicles you'll find on the road. The key to it all, though, is that it all starts with being a truck. Everybody that buys a truck needs a truck first. So you don't sacrifice on that or adjust that. It all starts with being the best truck you can be, whether you're buying the high series or the low series or one in the middle. And so that's what makes it so great to work on.
So what makes it a truck? Is it payload? Is it towing capacity? What are the things that make a truck a very useful truck?
It is payload and it's towing capacity, but it's also things like towing confidence, right? So the functionality, the features that we put in to help customers actually tow better, to allow them, if they're not comfortable towing, we help them with that. So, you know, about 75% of our customers tow a trailer, they tell us. Less than half tow regularly. So we want to help them take that challenge out of that with things like, Pro Trailer Backup Assist and our new Trailer Reverse Guidance camera system. So one of the most difficult things towing is backing the trailer up. We actually let you steer the trailer with Pro Trailer Backup Assist, which we launched a few years ago. Now we've added a Trailer Reverse Guidance camera system so that you actually see down the sides of the trailer and can see which way it's going to angle or go to really help you put it the right place you want it to go. So it's not just towing capacity, it's towing confidence and towing features that help with that.
I kind of interrupted us talking about the interior of the vehicle. We talked about the backseat area, but let's talk about the front seat first and what's going on there, and then we could talk about infotainment system as well.
Sure. So there are a couple more things in the cab of the truck from a functional standpoint that are really interesting. About a third of customers tell us that they use a laptop in their vehicle. When you look, they don't have any place to do that. So we actually have come out with our interior work surface in the vehicle, both in our bench seat configuration and in our bucket seat configuration. There's an actual work surface that will fold out and give the customer a place to actually use their laptop, tablet, writing pad, eat their lunch, right, in the vehicle. It's a great idea. It's one of those that you think about for a long time and say, this should have been a long time ago, right, the way we customers use the trucks. So we included that in the vehicle. At the same time, we noticed in our research, customers actually will take rests in their vehicle, right? Long haul, going down, they'll pull into a rest area, take 20 minutes to kind of get caught up. So we have our fold flat seating surfaces that fold back almost 180 degrees. At the same time, when the seat folds all the way down, the bottom actually lifts up. So it becomes flat for you to lay in, and there's a shoulder adjustment for you. So you get really comfortable in there for that if you're looking for it. So again, really identifying, watching customers, living with them, seeing what they need, what would make that truck better for them, those things that they do that nobody's ever thought of before.
Well, let's talk about infotainment. You have a big screen, you have some voice activation, a bunch of things going on. Tell us about those features.
Yeah, so we've switched, we're launching Sync 4. We're the first vehicle in the company to launch our new version of Sync. It has twice the processing power of the previous version. Much more user-friendly from a wording standpoint, right? So you can actually use wake words to wake it up now. Say, okay, Ford, wake it up. And say, you know, take me to the closest gas station, avoid toll roads. And it will do that. It's that simple. You don't have to be very precise anymore with the words. At the same time, we have our new 12-inch digital touchscreen in the middle of the truck. It's a great new screen. Landscape design lets us put multiple things on it at the same time. We actually have Android Auto and Apple CarPlay wirelessly in the vehicle now, and it doesn't take over the whole screen. So you can have your Apple Auto up, or Android Auto or Apple CarPlay up for your music. You can use our navigation system with Sync if you would like. At the same time combination. It's a great, great feature set.
You could have the two navigation systems battling one another to see.
Yeah, I guess you probably could. Yeah, I've tried it, but I guess you could.
Yeah, absolutely. Why don't you take our listeners through the various levels of F-150? Obviously, there's a lot of volume here. There's a lot of iterations of it. I think you have, for example, 11 different grill configurations. Tell us a bit about that.
Sure. So we call it the power of choice because, like I said before, we have customers that run a full gamut of what they need the truck for and what they're purchasing it. So we start with our XL at the entry level in the vehicle line, and it can be very basic, right? Manual windows, manual
I love
door
the
locks.
Idea of crank windows. You know, they work even when the car is turned off.
We have customers that tell us they want to keep those. So we've kept them for them. At the same time, we have included the 8-inch touchscreen and Sync 4 standard in that truck. So for those customers that need that Bluetooth wireless pass-through of their phones, they have that capability now. So you go XL, and we have a package in there, STX. This is very popular for us. It's kind of a sport version of that. We go up to XLT, which is our highest volume series. It's our mid-series in the lineup. It's a great truck. We can actually get the 12-inch screen in that. You can get LED headlamps on it. Push button start, the things customers are really looking
for.
What's
kind of an average transaction price that you're looking for that midline vehicle?
You mean not the total vehicle line in the midline? It's going to be in that probably 40 range by the time you get, high 30s, 40 by the time you put the four-wheel, most of our volume four-wheel drives and the crew cab configuration.
Right.
So.
And then take us up the rest of the.
Sure. So after XLT, you have our Lariat, which is our first high series leather seats. We put heated cooled seats in it. We have our new LED projector headlamps that have dynamic bending available in there. And then you go up into our premiums, King Ranch, Platinum Limited. King Ranch is very country western styled. We work with the actual King Ranch in Texas, in Kingsville, Texas, which is a very old existing ranch in the U.S. with over 800,000 contiguous acres.
I think it's bigger than some states. I think it might be bigger than Rhode Island, if I remember correctly.
If I remember right, I think it is. Yes, you can, and it's the only ranch you can spot from space. When I was there, the ranch folks told me that because they own some land on the coast of Gulf of Mexico, and it's not lit. It's undeveloped, so you can see it in satellite pictures. So, but then we have Platinum, which is another premium series, kind of more. More urban design, but both of these have real materials, real woods in them, and high quality leathers and finishes. And then at the top we have our Limited, kind of sport design. It's our 22-inch wheels. At the same time we put like our suede headliner in it and leather wrap the dash and other things. So it's very luxurious at the top of our line.
Why don't you tell me what you think is what is the most exciting feature or couple of features? Where you think this time around, 2021, you really knocked it out of the park with this or that?
There's a few things that I'm always excited about. Pro Power on board, the onboard generator, we've had so much interest in that, and it's so helpful, right, for customers not to have to buy the generator, carry it, store it, drag it, theft issues, things like that. The hybrid itself is just a fantastic addition to our powertrain lineup with the capability it has, the performance. We call it the true and solution, right? It's got power, capability, and efficiency all at the same time. I think some of those touches that where we just paid attention to customers again, like the tailgate work surface, the interior work surface, those just show we're really trying to make the truck a better vehicle for customers to use in their everyday lives. And that's what we really try to do.
Let's take us through the powertrain choices. We talked about kind of the high line, but let's take it from the bottom to the top.
Sure. So we have six powertrains in F-150. We start with our 3.3-liter V6. For 2021, we've actually tied that to our new 10-speed transmission that we launched a couple years ago. So that'll be the first time that that's got the 10-speed. Our whole lineup uses the 10-speed now. We have our very popular 2.7 EcoBoost, which has been a great engine for us since we launched it in 2015. Our 5-liter V8, so there's a lot of customers we know are V8 buyers. We don't just give them a V8, we give them a great V8, and we improve it. So for 2021, we actually increased the horsepower and torque, and we've added displacement on demand to it. Again, improving that V8 engine for our customers, give them a great powertrain. We have our 3.5 EcoBoost. Then we go to our diesel, our 3-liter Power Stroke diesel in the truck, and we've got our 3.5-liter Power Boost hybrid.
So really, something for everybody.
I would say when you have this many sales and this many series and this broad of a customer base, the number of powertrains really makes sense and works for them, right? You're right. We have to find something for everybody to work to use. But again, it all stems back to truck first, and all those powertrains really lean into those truck capabilities and qualities.
Right. It strikes me that the previous edition of this truck, you took a lot of chances on, right? You went to aluminum body, and that was maybe taking a chance. You went to a lot of turbocharged engines, and maybe that was taking a chance. It strikes me now, they have been good bets. They have worked out for you. This, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, it seems like more of a assembling what was already there, kind of refining what was previously there in a lot of ways, adding tech. But how would you characterize this generation versus the previous generation?
This generation is, it actually has probably more new features and content than the previous one when you really think about it. All right, we added 10 new driver assist technologies, 9 of them are class exclusive. We've got active drive assist coming, which will be true hands-free driving. So today you can purchase our prep kit. The software's not quite ready, so you can purchase the prep kit with the hardware that you need today. Next summer when the software's ready, you'll be able to purchase that and download the software using an over-the-air update system. So the truck will have an embedded modem in every vehicle. With that, we'll be able to actually update the entire vehicle for customers, right? Making it better over the lifespan of the vehicle that they own it. Not just the infotainment system, but things like powertrain calibrations and transmission settings and brake settings. I mean, really, really helping our customers have a better vehicle through the life cycle. So, I mean, there's a lot of great innovations in this vehicle that really, I launched the 2015 as well, and it was fantastic. But this has so many more things to it that are really going to help customers have a better vehicle for their daily use.
Interesting. Well, you've intrigued me about the self-driving. Describe, like what kind of level will that be, all of that stuff?
Yeah, I probably can't tell you the level because I don't know. I don't have an exact figure of that. But the way it will work is it's true hands-free driving. There is a camera and sensors that watch your eyes, basically to make sure that you're paying attention to the road.
Paying attention, right.
As long as you're paying attention, there are sections of highway where you'll be able to take your hands off the steering wheel using our intelligent adaptive cruise control system and our active drive assist system. The vehicle will head down the highway for you.
Okay. Will it be able to change lanes by itself or something like that, or is that beyond its capability?
No, it will just start. You'll stay in your lane as you're going down the road, but okay. It's a true hands-free system.
Yeah, very, very cool. Well, I believe these vehicles are imminent, right, in showrooms. Talk a bit about that.
Yep, so we are building now. They should start showing up in dealerships before the end of the year. So we're really excited to get this truck on the road and get customers in it. And if you can't tell our enthusiasm here today with showing off our trucks, where you work on something so long, you're just anxious to get everybody in it and a chance to look at it. So really anxious for customers to take a drive in it.
Yeah, very, very good. Well, I can tell how enthusiastic we can tell by the background noise here for our interview. Well, Brian Bell, thanks so much for being with us. We do appreciate it. We wish you a great deal of good luck with the 2021 F-150 pickup truck, and I'm sure you'll have it.
Well, thank you for spending a little time with me today and let me talk about the new truck. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for being with us, everybody, and stay with us right here on America on the Road.
And that was our interview with Brian Bell. He's the marketing manager for the Ford F-150 pickup truck. What a pleasure it was to talk with Brian all about that great new vehicle, a contender for North American Truck of the Year. We'll see how it fares in the next couple of weeks. And I want to thank, of course, our inimitable, just wonderful co-host, Chris Teague, has been with us again. Chris, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me yet again. And thanks, everyone, for listening. If you like what you heard and you want to hear more of it, go ahead and hit the subscribe button wherever you get your podcasts. And leave us a review, would you? It'll help us continue to grow and get in front of more people and bring them along for the ride as well.
We'd love to have you along for the ride and your friends along for the ride, so please do that. Please check out my book, too, The GR Factor, Unleashing the Undeniable Power of the Golden Rule. It is available on Amazon, at Barnes & Noble, at local bookstores, the country over, so check that out. It's sold internationally.
I've sold some in Europe, in Japan, and all over the world. So look for that book. I think if you like the show, you might like the book. And we certainly like being with Chris Teague, so thanks so much to him for being with us. And thanks so much to you, the listening audience, for being with us. We really do appreciate it. Please join us again next time right here for another edition of America on the Road.